Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Hey, it's Jack, and this is Jackie Road Studios, the podcast where I sit down with a guest, and then at the end of the interview, I take something from the chat and use it to inspire a new song that I write and record and play for you. Like at the end of this episode, there is a brand new song, and then all the songs you can find on the streaming services. If you search Jack Post, they're also up on YouTube. Some of them have lyric videos. Thank you to Sam Williamson from Woodside Media, who's making the lyric videos, and the lyrics can be found on YouTube. Also, now the full interviews can be found on YouTube as well. So search Jack Post or Jackie Road Studios on YouTube to see today's interview with the one and only Amy Shark. I mean, this has been the biggest week of the podcast, and Amy Shark has been the most impactful guest I've had on the podcast, and we haven't even played her episode yet. Let me get that to that in a moment. First, I'll play you a bit of Amy Shark's music. If you're not familiar with her, maybe for people outside of Australia, you may not have heard of Amy Shark, but by now, surely all Australians know of Amy Shark. She is one of my favorite Australian artists. Her song, Adore, is one of my favorite songs. It made it into number 2 in the 2016 Triple J's Hottest 100. Here's a little bit of Adore by Amy Shark. Amy Shark is a 6-time ARIA Award winner. Her song I Said Hi was the 2019 Song of the Year, and her album Love Monster peaked at number 1 on the Australian charts. And one of my all-time favorite artists, I mean, I speak about them all the time on the show. There's like the three pillars of the bands I speak about on the show are Green Day, NoFX, and Blink-182. And Amy has worked with Mark Hoppus from Blink-182. He even appears on the Love Monster album in the song Psycho. This is Amy and Mark Hoppus singing together on the chorus of that song.
I ask you 'cause I wanna know, not because I'm psycho, just because I care a lot. And I touch you the way I do 'cause I'm falling in love with you, and I don't do this every day.
So of course I was so excited to have Amy Shark come into Jackie Road Studios. And if you heard last week's podcast or you follow me on social media, you already know what happened. I forgot to record Amy's side of the interview. We linked up over a Zoom type thing, but without video, called Zencaster. And I recorded my side of the audio and then didn't record Amy's side. Thank God she recorded video on her end, and I was able to pull the audio off her video that she filmed on her laptop. So the full video of this interview with Amy's audio included is on YouTube, and I've got the full audio today. But I tell you what, nothing has been more popular that I've ever put on social media than the big failure that is the audio of me telling Amy Shark that I didn't record the interview. So before I knew that she had audio on her end, this is me coming to the end of this interview and realizing that I hadn't recorded Amy's side.
Mate.
Cool, man. Thank you so much for doing that. Just before you close this, the only thing is when I stop this recording, holy shit. Oh, dude, I didn't record it.
No.
I'm not joking, dude. I'm so sorry. I put that on Instagram. It is by far the best. the best performing video I think I've ever put up there. Thank you to all the people in the radio industry who came forward and shared their stories in the comments of similar things happening. But I couldn't believe where this went next. So then news.com.au picked up the audio and put out an article. Then the Daily Mail put out an article about it. And then it just started to snowball from there. This is on Studio 10 on Channel 10 last week.
Welcome back. An Aussie radio star has opened up about his disastrous interview with singer Amy Shark, saying the experience will scar him. Jack Post revealed that after chatting with Amy, he discovered he'd forgotten to record her.
Apparently, I'm a radio star now. This is on Matt and Alex's new podcast called All Day Breakfast.
But he's branched out recently with his own podcast, Jackie Rhodes Studios, in which recently he was recording his first big interview with Aussie music superstar Amy Shark. The chat went for 45 minutes. It was apparently a great chat, but at the end of it, Jack found out that he wasn't recording.
And then, of course, we talked about it on my breakfast show with Christian O'Connell on Gold.
And you were lucky enough to get some time with her.
Yep.
Through the record company Sony, who are a major label.
And then I only recorded my half of the interview. So my questions, my reactions to her answers, but
the only
none
thing
of
missing
Amy.
Was the guest.
Yes.
Just
other
minor.
Than that, a great interview.
So I can't believe we got into the news. We got on TV all before the interviews even out. The good news is I have the full interview here today. I'm very thankful to Amy for saving this interview and, of course, sitting down with me in the first place, because we got to talk about some of, how she makes her great music, and then some really heavy hitters and some of my all-time favorite artists who she's worked with. It's all coming up in Jackie Rhodes Studios today with Amy Shark. The song she chose as her intro song is Coolio, Gangster's Paradise. Amy Shark joins me in Jackie Rhodes Studios this week. That is Coolio, Gangster's Paradise. Thanks for jumping into Jackie Rhodes, Amy.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
That is I think because we're a similar age, we have a lot of crossover in music taste, but what does that song mean to you?
I think it was probably one of the coolest songs. It's like, you know how sometimes you hear a song and you just feel cool when you're listening to it? I remember it coming out, and it was like a really big introduction to sort of rap and R&B, because I just remember it being a big shift from, you know, liking, I don't know, the Spice Girls and Backstreet Boys, and
yeah,
then all
sure,
of a sudden it's
sure.
like Coolio, and then from Coolio you go into like, I think I fell into like The Offspring and Silverchair and stuff like that. So it was just like a real switch up of alternative. Like, just I think it was like me realizing, oh, I like alternative stuff. I don't really like, the kids stuff anymore.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about that song on my radio show the other day, and someone told me, I think it came out in 1996, it was the highest selling single of that year, which I couldn't believe. I thought it was more like, yeah, if you're alternative, you knew about it, but no, apparently it was the biggest song of the year.
Well, I mean, rightfully so. It's pretty awesome. I still walk into the kitchen even today and just go, what's going on in the kitchen?
And then those bands, like, I mean, you're speaking straight to me, like Offspring and like the bands that came out in the late 90s, those kind of punk bands like Green Day and Blink-182 and all those.
Totally.
That was you as well?
Yeah, I went into a real big punk sort of stage, that emo-y kind of nasal punk.
The Tom DeLonge voice.
The Tom DeLonge voice and Newfound Glory and MXPX and Early November and like Taking Back Sunday, just heaps of really, just like a real movement at the time, and everyone was wearing skinny jeans and it was awesome. It was a real it was a real time, a real fun time. Like, I listen to that music and it takes me back to really feral pubs and clubs I used to go to, but also really fun times with my friends, because we were all just living for this music and going to shows and going to gigs and festivals, and
yeah,
it just brings back really good memories.
Yeah, I bet it would bring back good memories for me as well, except I never stopped listening to that music, and it's the first thing I choose when I stream music or put music on in the house or put music on in the car.
Yeah.
I never really grew out of it.
No, I still always go back to it, but I think there was, you know, when sometimes you get like that one key person that kind of shows you another way to music. And I started working at this clothing store, and my manager at the time there, like the store manager, was into like the Avalanches and Amy Winehouse and Propeller Heads and mm-hmm. all this and Faithless. And I think from there, I guess I was really open to just listening to so much more. And because I'd been trapped in the punk scene and I didn't even want to know about any other music. I didn't even want to know about any other genre. Yep. I was like, no, I'm punk, I'm hardcore. and then, yeah, I just remember hearing all these other alternative groups and DJs and, you know, R&B groups and stuff. So it was just like, yeah, it was really, really cool time, I think, for music.
And you were in a punk band in high school, were you?
Oh, if you could call it that.
No, that can't be. You know what? I asked Liam Stapleton just the other week the same question, and he tensed up in the same way, like, I don't want to talk about the atrocities of my high school. But, I mean, I was in a shit punk band in high school as well. I feel like you got to just embrace where you came from, right?
Yeah, you know what? I look at the time, you go through stages where you're like, oh, it's so cringy. And but then I found some footage the other day, and you know, you look at what I look at what I'm wearing, and I'm just like, oh God, Amy, what the hell were you thinking? But when I look back, it's actually, I just thought I was Axl Rose. I really did. I just like had his bandana on and my hair was completely straight and just wearing a tartan skirt and you know, ripped sort of stockings. I went through a real sort of gothic stage, had a few breakups, and I think I was just broken.
Dude, I did. I did the Axl Rose bandana as well. I mean, I feel like somebody in every high school did the Axl Rose bandana. Why my friends never told me not that that was a bad look, and that with my curly hair, I wasn't really pulling it off the same way. I don't know.
I know, but you got to look. That's just a part of growing, isn't it? Like, I look back, and even some of the really shitty songs, I'm like, there's a bit of hook. There's a bit of a hook in that. Like, there's a tiny melody. Like, we kind of knew what we were doing, but it was so loud and aggressive and angry. And you know, it was an all girl band, and we were all loving. Like, I think my bassist was into like Soulfly, like Rob Zombie, and then another girl in it was into like just Living for Nirvana. And then I was kind of going through a real Tegan and Sarah Modest Mouse sort of vibe. So it was just like we were all had our issues.
And were you writing the songs and singing?
I was writing them with another girl, yeah. And it was so much fun. And it also taught me really early on that bands are really hard work, like to get everyone there, and is everyone as committed as what I am? And and then everyone's got to put money in, and it was, and obviously at that time in my life we were all at like uni and no one had any money, and I think the drummer got pregnant, and it was just like really, it was just like hard, it was hard work, it was really hard work. And then I think the more I started, you know, I think like Missy Higgins and that was coming out. And it just gave everyone, it gave females especially a chance to be like, oh, maybe I could just do this by myself, because I really did enjoy just like really like writing everything myself. So I enjoyed that time, but I was always meant to be a solo artist.
Yeah, right. And do you still write songs the same way? Do you like, do you write songs just on acoustic guitar, or like where does it mostly start?
Yep, acoustic guitar. I think at that stage I had an electric and I was just, you know, loving the distortion pedal. But
like the first time you get a distortion pedal, you just turn everything up to full.
I know. And just the big power chords and basically anything Blink was doing, I wanted to do. And I think it kind of gave you hope if you weren't a natural, like, I mean, I love guitar and I used to just, that's all I did. I played guitar every day after school until dinner time. And then I'd still go back in my room after dinner and keep playing. So I got, yeah. I got good. But watching people like bands like Blink, it's like, oh, I don't need to be a total shredder. I don't need to learn the classic style. They just do what they do. And I think that's what gave me real motivation to just do what I wanted to do, because it was allowed. Bands were doing that. Bands didn't sound like Mariah Carey. They weren't playing this big classical sort of intricate Led Zeppelin style. It was easy. It was like three power chords. So to me, it was doable.
I even love watching bands like Blink-182 and other punk bands around that time of shows you'd go and see. And they're not even getting it right half the time when they're playing on stage.
Like, they suck live.
Tom wasn't very good live. But I remember that gives you like, well, my band sucks, so, but it worked for them. Yeah. So maybe it's not as big a deal as I think it is.
Yeah, I think there's some merit in that, because I've gone to shows before where technically they're brilliant and they're very well, you know, rehearsed and everything. And I'm like, it's stale. There's something stale about it.
Well, like, for someone like me, that sometimes just depresses me, like, oh, God, you guys are so good. Like, this is so far away from anything I could ever do. And now it just kind of bums me out.
Yeah, when any shit kind of goes wrong now, I kind of embrace it and think this is real life. And I look down at whoever's in the front row and they're just having the time of their life. And I just don't take myself too seriously on stage anymore. Yeah. And if I need something, I'll get it. If I need to take a second, I'll take a second. It's just, I'm not as highly strung as I think I was when I first started. But that just comes with doing it a lot.
Do you worry about getting, like, the bigger bands get, and I guess when they, like, get to arenas and get to stadiums, then there's just a expectation of having to be more slick the whole way through? Or do you think you don't have to be like that?
I think there's an expectation in some degree. Like, I want to bring a cool sort of set up, and I love, you know, lighting, and so I want to put effort into that. But when it comes to just my personality and the show itself, I just want it to be as if I'm playing in a small kind of, you know, 200 person venue. I still want to tell stories, and I still want to connect as much as possible. It's harder. It is a lot harder. And that's why when you see the pros like Adele and Taylor work that stadium like they do, it's mind blowing. But it proves it can be done.
Don't you think that is kind of like every second is thought out? I mean, I saw Taylor Swift a couple of years ago at Amy Park in Melbourne, and it's like every second is thought of and accounted for, and the lights match up with the music, and those fireworks go off here and there. It does take away, it's an amazing spectacle, but it does take away something about like a live performance.
Yeah, she's very slick, but then again, I think she has to be. I think that particular show that she wants to deliver has to be, you know, very, very well rehearsed, and, you know, you stick to the script. And I always, like, my partner Shane, who's very involved in my management team, every now and then if I go off script, I'll see him in the sound booth looking, just shaking his head like, what are you doing? but you know, I kind of like that. I gotta have a bit of free, you know, and he loves that too. Like, it's just like, I don't know, maybe I'll tell the story differently tonight, or but you know, that's just me as an artist, and I'm nowhere near the Taylor level. Maybe if I ever got to Taylor's level, I would agree and say, nope, everything has to be like this, because otherwise it won't run smoothly. And, you know, for this reason and that reason, I don't think anyone will really understand the size of those shows and what goes into them. And, you know, so, I give it to her, because if you didn't go to multiple shows, she makes you feel like this is her favorite show and you are her favorite person. And it's a very amazing skill.
So what are the biggest shows that you've played? What's the biggest audience you've played to?
I think Firefight. That was probably like the big sort of charity festival that we put on. You know, it was like 70,000 people, and there was a real crazy feeling in the air. It was so electric, and it felt like a Live Aid or something I don't know, when you look out to that many people, it was really incredible. But I kind of like that day I realized that I really get off on that. Like I love
70,000 on nothing.
People. Yeah. Yeah. It was probably bad. Yeah. I was talking to a couple of other artists and they're like, oh, this has set us up for failure, you know, this feeling. But I don't know, some of the artists don't like it. Some of the artists would rather. But I just think, wow, it's so terrifying but electric.
And what is it like playing? You play a bunch of festivals like here and overseas as well, don't you?
Yeah.
How's a festival compare to a solo show?
You just put your different hats on, I guess. Like in festivals are just fun. Like everything's a bit looser. Like it's not so. Like some shows, especially in the major cities, you know, you've got your label there, you've got all these people that you need to meet and talk to and mingle with, and then you've also got the show coming up, so it's really intense, and it's, you know, you look out, it's all these people are here to see you, you know, people in catering, people are there because of you, and once you realize that, it's like, oh my God, it's full on. But festivals, I don't know. It's like, man, if you're there at my stage at that time, let's party. Like, this is great. Because there's so many other options you could be at. But when you look out and you see so many people there at your set at wherever you are, Splendor, Lola, whatever, it's like, this is so much fun. And it's just a relaxed sort of energy, I guess, at festivals. I think every artist loves festivals.
Do you ever put time aside before a new tour or like going to festivals to actually think about onstage antics and like, oh, these are some gimmicks I could do, or like I might invent a new thing for me to do on stage this tour?
I sort of...
Because I've got one if you're looking for anything, I've got a good one.
What have you got? You give it to me. Tell me your idea.
All right. Well, you know how Freddie used to walk around without the full microphone stand? He just had the top half of the microphone stand.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We were painting our house and we had this extendable paint pole. And when it's at its shortest, it's about the same size as Freddie walked around with the microphone, right?
Yeah.
So you have the extendable paint pole, you're singing into it like Freddie, and then at a part where you want the crowd to sing, you chuck it into full extension 3 meters over the crowd and they sing into the microphone. And you can have that.
That is incredible. It's just like having like a Inspector Gadget arm.
Yeah, that's right. Like, and I imagine like you would get it custom made. You don't actually have to use a paint pole, but yours will be able to retract back in again with the push of a button.
I like that. Do you know Manson did something very similar, not with a microphone, but when I saw he did the Golden Age of Grotesque tour, and it was like a theater show. Honestly, it was just mind blowing. But he kind of like was raising sort of up like. Elevating, but he obviously was on stilts that sort of came up, and then his arms came out like into the audience. It was nuts.
So wait, what do you mean?
Like his arms extended out, like he was behind this big sort of priest lectern thing, and just it was all just getting bigger and bigger. And then he put his arms out, but then they kept extending out, like his arms were just like hovering over the crowd.
Oh, right, that really is Inspector Gadget stuff.
Yeah. He obviously had this built device behind him that would go out into the crowd. I don't know. I was trying to work out how he did it, but it was pretty awesome. So I like your idea. Your idea sounds a lot cheaper to do as well.
Yeah, really. But do you see shows now and go like, I'll steal some of that for my own show?
Yeah, there's definitely. I think artists like to go and borrow. It's funny because I'll say to, you know, my friends, I'm going to go check out this show. And they're like, oh, God, how can you listen to that music or whatever? It's like, no, I'm just going to steal ideas. Like, I don't really give a shit about their music. But, like, it's good and it's fun. And, you know, it's hard because you get to a stage where you no longer enjoy shows, like because you're in venues all the time and you're at festivals all the time. So that sparkle that used to be there as to why you'd go and line up and you'd you'd go to so many gigs, it kind of goes, sadly, when you're just forever living in venues.
That's sad, actually. And I've thought that in the past about, like, when you get to a super stardom stage, right, where you couldn't even walk through a crowd without people recognizing you, you couldn't go to gigs and just stand in the crowd anymore.
No, it's... And then it's funny because I've tried to do that before, and you put a hat on, and then what they do is they usher you to the sound booth, and it's like, I'm better off just being here, man. I'm better off just not being in somewhere where people look to see who's in the sound booth. You know what I mean? Like, I'm better off just hanging by the bar or something. So,
when was the last time you were just in the crowd, like in the thick of it? Who were you watching?
Where did I go? I went to a Simple Creatures show which is Mark Coppice's band with All Time Low guy. And, it was awesome. And I think just because I'm not like someone in the States where people are like, oh my God, it's Amy Sharp. I'm like, I'm building a fan base there. It's getting nice and strong, but the only reason I think people noticed me there was I came straight from promo and I still had my hair up, and then obviously I had the song with Mark, so people were putting the two together. But but it was so fun. America and LA are very different. They don't like freak out. They I think they're kind of used to just seeing big time celebs just going to get a burrito. So. I think that was my last one.
Has the hair become so iconic for you now that, like, you can't not wear your hair like that when you play?
It gets, you know, it kind of annoys me because I love, like, I wear my hair like that because sometimes I just think my head looks flat, and that's why I used to wear my hair like that all the time, and you know, my partner's like, oh, it looks really pretty, but now if I wear my hair out like that at dinner, I'm scared that people think, oh, she just wants to be noticed or whatever. It's like, no, I actually just wear my hair like this.
Yeah,
but
and I can't let you guys see my flat head.
Yeah, exactly. My hair's like totally flat and dead and dirty. Most of the time it's just dirty. It's like I can trick people if I put it up. But it's definitely to the stage where I was having dinner and I had a hat on, and this lady came over and she's like, oh, my daughter's a big fan. Can I bring her over? And I was like, yeah, for sure. And the daughter was like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or something. And she came up to me and she kind of nestled back into her mum and she's like, that's not her. and her mum's like, yeah, it is. It's Amy. And she's like, no, because she doesn't have the top knot. And she was actually terrified, and I had to like take my hat off, and I'm like, no, it's me. It's me. But so I was like, okay, this is a thing. This is something.
And did it happen by accident, or did it? Yeah, like did you make a plan to like, all right, this hair now is gonna go with me for every time I release a song?
No. Oh God, no. And some people, honestly, some interviews I've had, they're like, so, God, it's so clever how you just put together the Adidas and that, and it all worked. And it's like, who does that? I don't know. I never did. I've always worn Adidas. I had so many years of guys telling me, wear a dress to this and wear this to that and whatever. And it was like, I was at the end anyway. I'd given up on music, so it didn't really bother me. But when it came time for a door, I said to Shane, I'm like, I'm wearing what I want to wear. And he's like, you should just wear jeans and a t-shirt. And then I used to always put my hair up in a top knot after I'd been to the beach or whatever. Yeah. But we were in New York and I had a meeting with a label and I just put my hair up like that. I'm like, I think I'm just going to put my hair up. And that was it. And then we went to the meeting and then for some reason, the guy was like, I love your jacket and I love your hair. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, and then that's all it really took. I don't know. And then I love the idea of having a uniform. I just thought how easy
then
to just
you don't have
know
to think
that that's
night.
How I do my hair.
Yeah.
I like how it is. It really boosts that alter ego. And then, I have just like my outfits that I wear that I don't have to remember a bunch of different things, like different boots and bangles and pieces, you know. It's just easy and comfortable.
So I imagine eventually you heard from Adidas. How far into the whole thing was it that Adidas was like, thank you for wearing our clothes?
They've been so great. They just, you know, we were working on like these crazy deals and stuff, but they were kind of like, you know, obviously you can't be seen wearing anything else like Adidas, like Nike or Puma and stuff. So to me at the time, I was like, oh, let's just wait. At the moment, they're sending me free stuff. So that's like, yeah, that's cool. We'll just keep it like a really chill deal at the moment. But yeah.
Yeah, because my sister, I mean, she claims that it's not because of Amy Shark, but she had an uptick in the same striped Adidas type T-shirts around the time, like, you know, over the last couple of years.
Nice. That's great. I mean, it's funny because I go to shows and I just look out and there's so many, just the three stripes everywhere and a sea of top knots, and I love it. It's my little army.
Let's go back to, I don't want to brush over the Mark Hoppus thing because I'm a huge Blink-182 fan. Please tell me everything, spare no detail about what it was like working on that song.
It was really easy. Luckily enough, he sent me a DM saying, oh, I love your music and we've got some friends in common, and next time you're in LA, let's, you know, get a coffee or, you know, whatever. And
so was that moment like? Like, you're checking through your DMs and Mark Hoppus drops into your DMs.
Yeah. Well, we were actually in Hawaii. It was after a tour, a big tour. And we were just taking like a little break before I went back to the States. I was actually on my way back to LA anyway. But I just remember seeing his name pop up and I just looked at Shane. I was like, holy shit, I have a DM from Mark Hoppus. And it was just like, we both just were so happy. Like, I think we had like, I don't know, 100 pina coladas that day. But so I was like, oh my God, I'm actually coming back to LA. Like, I would love to meet you. So then we went and had coffee. He was just telling me everything that I wanted to hear.
Tell me.
Yeah, just like I was talking to him about Conway Studio. I was like, what studios have you worked in here? And I'm like, oh, I worked at Conway. He's like, oh yeah, we did Take Off Your Pants there and we did that. And I was like, oh my God. And he's just so tall and he looks like Mark Hoppus and he sounds like Mark Hoppus. And my heart was just racing. It was the first time I really had a moment. I was like, oh wow, this guy has soundtracked so much of my life.
Yeah, and so true.
It was the first time I had to really, you know, my hand was shaking and it was just a mess. I'm usually pretty good and I can play it kind of cool, but I was a mess that day. And then I got better as the you know, time went on, and he was asking me about where I was up to with the record, and he was super interested. And I sort of pride myself on reading the room, you know, like I can read the room if he's just doing this because he knows I'm a fan and whatever. Yep. But he was asking too many questions how long I was there for and blah, 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 and what songs and how many songs left. And right, I'm like, oh, I mean, I've got some more songs. I mean, if you ever wanted to work with me on one, I love that. And I kind of slid it in quite smoothly and he jumped at it. He was like, yeah, I'd love to. He's like, what, you just send me some and I'll have a listen. And then, so anyway, we wrapped it up that night. I sent him Psycho and he wrote back straight away. He's like, Amy, I love it. Let's do it. How long are you here for? Do you want me to sort out the studio? And I was like, I hadn't even asked anyone in my team. Like, no one knew. I went absolutely rogue. Yeah. So, so that's why this time around, everyone's petrified. They're like, Amy, make sure you tell us. We don't care. We'll do whatever you want, but just at least tell us who you're talking to and what might eventuate. But
the song was fully written. He didn't add any lyrics or anything. He just came to sing on it.
Well, this was the great bit about it. So the song was fully written. I had, like, because I was just going to do it myself. Mm. Like, I still thought it's a great song.
And then were you going through that night when you're, like, thinking of what song to send? Do you, like, you know, make up a list of, like, all right, it could be that one, it could be that one, it could be that one. No, that wouldn't work. This one might work.
To be honest, I think it was always going to be Psycho. Like, as I sat there and as he was talking to me, an artist that's really in control of their career, and if they're like a real songwriter, you know exactly what songs you have in the bank, mm-hmm. and where they are and what stage they're at. If they could use a feature, like I've got songs that I just have in my mental bank of what I'm going to do with them and who's going to produce them and or who I'm going to try. Yeah. So straight away I was like, Psycho. It's going to happen. His voice is going to sound sick. And I was thinking, I don't even care what he wants to do. He can do a chorus or he can do a verse or whatever. And then, like, so he sorted out the studios, which happened to be the Foo Fighters, like, personal studios in the Valley. So that was
wait, it's not the
hard.
Sound City one that Dave Grohl's got in his house.
So this, he's got the Sound City desk he bought.
Oh, yeah, bought, I've seen the documentary. Oh, my God, that's amazing.
The desk is called something. Damn it.
Yeah, the desk, like all the buttons and all the knobs and stuff.
Yeah, it's got a name, but the Sound City desk. And it's got, like, you know, all the signatures from Johnny Cash to absolutely everybody on this desk. So I was getting, you know, a lesson in the desk, and then... There's just Grammys everywhere. There's Grammys holding the toilet door open. Like, it's crazy. Like, Dave Grohl's just got... It's just the coolest... It's the coolest studios ever.
So is Dave Grohl there?
No, he wasn't there, but just the
Mark
fact
Hoppus
that he
has the
uses,
keys to Dave Grohl's house.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I think it was, like, my first experience of, like, real rock star world. Like, because people... I've been around people that have a big profile. Mm. Yeah, they got a bunch of money and whatever. But this was, like, I turned up in my little Uber and all of a sudden I had, like, someone there opening the door. Another person was, like, getting my guitars. And then someone else was, like, asking me what I want for lunch and do I want a coffee now? And there was another guy that was going to take me on a tour around the studio. And it was, like, oh, shit, this is, like, what a real rock star
amazing.
Lives like. Like, and like so Hoppus doesn't move. Like, he just sits, he gets his guitars passed to him. People know what he wants. It was crazy.
And did you feel like, was it imposter syndrome feeling or was it like, yeah, I'm here, I've arrived?
I always feel that because I think, you know, you'd be a bit full of yourself to not have that feeling. Mm. And I think it's healthy too when you're just like a little girl from the Gold Coast who's now in this massive studio with a full rock legend. So I definitely felt that. But then there's a time where you're like, okay, you got to cut the bullshit now and really step up because, you know, you just, even if you don't feel you belong in these rooms, you got to act like it.
Yeah.
So, I thought that I did. And I love that Mark sort of said, do you mind if I write my own verse? And I was like, oh my God, I'd love that.
That's
like,
awesome.
I'd love that more so because that means, you know, he's more connected to the song.
Yeah.
And then you're secretly thinking, like, I hope it's good. You know?
It's going to be very hard to tell Mark Hoppus that I don't want his verse on the album.
I just wouldn't have done it. I just would have taken it with a grain of salt. But luckily, yeah, obviously, he's Mark Hoppus for
and
a
so
reason.
You write, did he write it just, like, in the room on the day, or did he go, that's awesome?
He went for a little walk, and he had his burrito upstairs, and then he kind of, like, texted me and said, oh, come listen to this, and I was like, hey, I love it. I love it.
So,
And then it was done. It was done in like a day. And he's got great people around him, like his guitar tech and his people are really great people. So got to, you know, make more friends. And it was really fun.
And is it Billy Corgan working with you on the next album?
Oh man, there's so much talk about Billy Corgan, and I need to start setting it straight.
Is that not true? Sorry.
No, well, I met him, and he met me. I was working in a studio over there, and we kind of had friends in common who knew like his manager really well, and then he knew I was a big fan, and I think he said, I hear that Sharp Girl's in town. That's what all I remember, is that Sharp Girl's in town. You know, let's see if she'll have time to meet with me. And I was like, I will always have time to meet with Billy Corgan. So he ended up coming to this studio to meet me, and we just had a really great chat, like good chat from, you know, things that everyone wants to hear, like about Nirvana days and when Smashing were, like, you know, kicking off and Courtney Love and all sorts of stuff that I just was aching to know. And then one great thing came out of it. I played in this song that will be on the album, and I was really confused about it. I didn't know why it wasn't working. Mm. And I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to ask Billy. Like, he's the god. Like, I might as well. And he's like, I think you're making the guitar too confusing. He's like, you're a good guitarist, but your actual forte is melody and lyric. And he's like, if you just play that one note and let it ring out. And he was sort of just playing it for me as I held the note down.
Oh,
and
amazing.
He's like, now sing it. And I was singing it. And I'm like, oh, my God. And it did. It just made the melody shine and made the story come to the front. And I was like, that's, even that, it sounds so simple, but it's like I needed him to tell me that. And it was just so cool. And now, like, when everyone hears this song, I can't wait to talk about it because it was, yeah, it's really changed the whole dynamic.
Yeah, you have an amazing way of, like, I totally agree with, like, melody and lyrics, but, like, your songs just have these ache in them that, like, for whatever reason, even if it's in his background music, I find myself, like, tuning into the lyrics and, like, really, like, feeling it every time I put your music on.
Oh, thanks, man. That's why I'm here. That's the kind of artist I... That's my offering to the world. You know, take it or leave it.
But so Billy Corgan isn't on the song?
No. No, he's not.
Sad. No. Is there anyone like the Mark Hoppus feature? Or are you trying to be coy about it because you're not allowed to say yet?
I'm trying to be coy as possible, but I can say that I have got two pretty awesome features on the album.
Oh, right, beside Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, well, Ted, I now feel like just going through a list of really cool people and asking you if they're them or not and trying to detect in your voice.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Lying.
I know. God, I'm so bad too because, yeah, I'm just so bad at this. But because I'm just like so excited and I'm trying to not be as gobby as I was on the first album and just sit back and let people just listen to the music. But it's hard when you're so pumped up about something and so excited and I'm just sitting here with it and...
Yeah.
No one even knows.
And so what is that other people who make decisions about like how to release singles and like, oh, you got to wait this long for the first one, then another one, then we can release the album. And...
Yeah. I mean, it's so loose right now, dude. Like it's so, no one really, I mean, people know there's a big plan and obviously there's many people in my team and internationally as well. So I'm really respectful of that. But then there's times like, you know, we had a single coming out and the world was not only sick with Corona, but we also had a massive Black Lives Matter movement that was, you know, in the middle of when I was going to try and, you know,
oh, right. So is this for that Everybody Rise single?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's things
really
like that
like,
are popping up.
Yeah.
In the world, and if you don't say it, you know, your team, you know, there's times every now and then that I really do need to, you know, voice my opinion of, no, I don't feel right doing this and this doesn't feel like the right time. And, but yeah, it's a weird space at the moment for every artist. I think the way you used to do things and the usual setup, and it's, you know, I think it's a good thing because some teams out there treat artists like, oh, you roll it out and every artist is the same. It's like, we're not. And it's time to shake it up and listen to the artist and you know, just do things when they feel right.
Yeah, well, it's your music. So are you allowed to say, is there a period, do you know when the album's coming out and you're not allowed to say, or can you say, or you don't know?
I can't. I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right.
But the thing is, I mean... You know, like, you're a good music guy and you're in the industry, you know it can't be far. So that's my little hint.
The other one I heard, and I mean, I guess I'm going to get the same answer from you, but Ed Sheeran helped you, like, either worked on it or features on the album in some way.
I have a song that I wrote with Ed Sheeran and it's very incredible. And
answer the question makes it feel robotic, like somebody's got a gun to your back.
I know, yeah.
I have
do.
One song with Ed Sheeran.
I have written a song. I know. I'm like, I'm petrified, like thinking someone's gonna like sniper me. So look, I can't wait, and hopefully we can talk again because there's so much to say and unpack about that whole session, because what I learned from just observing that guy and how he has set up his life and how he is as a human being and how he goes about songwriting is like. The lessons I learned that day I'm gonna benefit from them for the rest of my life. It was just such a incredible experience. So it's gonna be really, really fun for me to talk about this next album.
Have you changed the way you write music now after meeting all these kind of people and just the experience of like having done it for so long? Does it change the way you write songs?
Not really. Not really. Like I feel like I've just gotten better, and I'm not saying that to be big-headed. I'm just saying, like, when you work at something and when you do it every day, you're going to get better at anything you do every day. Like, that's just how it works. Like, so I think the more I sort of flex my songwriting muscle, it just becomes a bit easier, and I get to know myself more, and I learn what I want to share and what I don't want to, and I learn what makes up a good melody and good chords and how, when to switch it up. I don't know. It's just like, it honestly is like, even your job, I'm sure you've gotten way better at doing your job because you do it more and you've done it more and you learn from the last one. And it's, yeah, I just feel like, and obviously I learn little tips and tricks along the way. Even listening to artists, I listen to Taylor and I listen to Ed and I listen to Ariana, and just like, although my music is a little different and maybe a slightly alternative version of that, but it's still, the structure is genius and the way they execute it and the production style is like so slick. So that's the main thing I wanted to do with this next album, is like really learn to make an album that can talk to the world and not just Australia.
Oh, that's interesting. So how, outside of Australia, is it the US that's the biggest fans of Amy Shark, or the UK, or who do you find?
The US is growing really strongly. Like, you know, it sucks about the whole no travel at the moment, because I was building something really exciting over there. And, you know, it's still building online. And, yeah, I've got strong fan base there, Canada, surprisingly Germany, because they put a door, I think it was like a perfume commercial or something. So it's just, you know, maybe the world of sync.
The Adidas clothing, maybe the Germans appreciate.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think they're kind of intrigued. And they all look at the hair like, how do you do the hair?
All right, Amy, thanks so much for joining me in Jackie Rhodes Studios. I can't wait to hear the new songs. Can't wait to hear Billy Corgan's voice, Ed Sheeran's voice. I heard you say Ariana Grande at one point, so I'm sure she's on the
album.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. Let's start these rumors. I love it. That's all I need right now.
Thanks so much for coming in.
No worries, dude. Appreciate the chat.
Bye. Loved having Amy Shark in Jackie Rhodes Studios this week. The full interview, I mean, you've just listened to it, so I don't know why you'd want to go and watch it, but do know that all the full interviews now of the guests are on YouTube. Search Jack Post on YouTube to find that, and all the songs are up there as well. And of course, all the songs are streaming on the streaming services. And then at the end of this series, it's your first time here, I'm doing 24 episodes. There's a song every second week, so that will give me 12 songs to put out a full album at the end of the series, which is coming up in November. And that also marks the giveaway of the Yamaha RS720B. How do you go into the draw to win the world's fastest guitar, the Yamaha? And it's open to everybody as well, by the way. You don't have to be a guitarist to win the guitar. It looks so sick. You can just put it on your wall or keep it in your room. Or if you're a Debbie Downer, I guess you could sell it on eBay and just use the cash. But all you need to do is get yourself a raffle ticket, and you get yourself a raffle ticket by writing into jackierhodesstudios@gmail.com. If your email gets read out on the show, you get a raffle ticket. I also started giving out raffle tickets to some people in the comments section of my Instagram as well. So very easy to get a raffle ticket, very easy to win a guitar at the end of the series. Let's get into this week's Talking Points.
Talking Points, oh, what are you talking points?
Talking Points is the easiest way to get involved with the show on email. I love reading your emails at jackierhodesstudios@gmail.com. Even if you got nothing to say on the Talking Points, just let me know that you're listening to the show and what you think of it. I feed off your compliments and lovely emails, and I need it to keep going. This week's Talking Points.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
Bands that suck live. Amy and I were talking about, I mean, they don't suck. Blink-182, I've seen live a couple of times, and they don't suck. They're awesome. Actually, I've seen Blink-182 three or four times, and every time I've really enjoyed them. The truth is, though, they didn't play perfectly, especially Tom on guitar. I felt like he was screwing up guitar bits left, right, and center. So this is inspiring bands that suck live. Tell me who you've seen live and suck. I'm not putting Blink-182 in there, even with the dodgy guitar skills. I am putting in The Strokes. Now, The Strokes came out, exploded in the early 2000s, and I saw them at Big Day Out, I reckon 2003. I really loved that first album they released, Is This It? And I was so excited to see them, and they came out like an hour late on stage. Everyone's waiting for them. So you think, all right, well, at least they're building anticipation. No, really what that meant is it just ate into their set. They came out super low energy, played for about half an hour at best, and then went off the stage. And everyone was like, oh, that kind of sucked. So my entry is The Strokes. Don't know if they got better on stage. Don't know if it was just a bad day. Everybody has their bad days, I guess. But let me know. Bands that suck live, JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
The second one relates to live performances as well. When I shared with Amy my onstage gimmick of having the paint pole that that has a microphone on the end, and then I would sing into it. This is my idea of when I'm, you know, when I'm a huge touring musician and I've got a band and people are coming to see me. I would use the paint pole at a small extension to sing like Freddie Mercury does with the top half of a microphone stand. And then when I want everybody to sing, the crowd to sing, I would launch it into its full extension, 2 meters, 3 meters out over the crowd, and you guys sing into the you guys sing into the microphone. See how deluded I am that I'm actually saying you guys? Like, as if when this series wraps up, I'll be playing festival shows and my album launches and you guys will all come and see me play the music. If you do, I'll do the paint pole thing. I don't think Amy's going to do it. And actually, I said that she could have it. That was just, I don't know why I said that. I don't want her to have it. I want to keep that. No one steal the paint pole. If you're in a touring band and I see the paint pole, I'm going to know you got it from this show. So the second talking point for this week, second and last talking point for this week, is on-stage gimmicks. Pitch me your on-stage gimmick that you've never seen done, and if you're in a band, that's what you would do on stage. I'm really excited to read these out. The more creative you get, the more chance you get to win more raffle tickets. I'll put the best one can have 3 raffle tickets. And even if you're not trying to compete to win the guitar, which I mean, I guess there's a lot of non-guitarists who listen to the show, please just write in for the fun of writing in. JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com. On stage gimmicks. If you can't think of your own, tell me the best ones you've seen from other bands. But really, I'm challenging you to be creative this week. Please get involved with the show. JackieRoadStudios@gmail.com. And you never know, you could win the world's fastest guitar, the Yamaha 720B. The song this week to end the episode is called Friends with a Shark. It essentially comes from the deluded idea that I had that I would become great friends with Amy Shark after doing this interview. We would be chatting and talking off air, and even though we did the interview, our friendship would blossom and live on. And then who knows, she would listen to the songs, she would realize what a great songwriter I am, and then she would bring me into the fold, introduce me to the likes of Mark Hoppus and all her friends over in the States. And that would kickstart my proper set songwriting career. I would leave radio. I would leave the Hamish and Andy podcast. Goodbye. I'm a songwriter now. Of course, I put my worst foot forward by finishing the interview and having to tell her that I didn't even record it properly. I want to highlight a really funny bit. Only in hindsight is this so funny, of something that Amy said during the interview. And keeping in mind, only less than 5 minutes after this, I tell her that I didn't even record what she was saying.
Honestly, it's like even your job, I'm sure you've gotten way better at doing your job because you do it more and you've done it more and you've, you know, you learn from the last one. And
I haven't got better and I haven't learned from the last time that I've done it because I've made plenty of mistakes like this in my life. But None bigger than this. Of course, as I said, Daily Mail, Studio 10, news.com.au. You know, I was even, somebody sent me on Instagram a screenshot of the news.com.au trivia this week. Jackie Road Studios and that incident with Amy Shark was a trivia question this week. So I want to thank Amy for being a good sport about it. And this song is dedicated to that moment. It's called Friends with a Shark. Thanks for listening. This is Jackie Road Studios.
Have you ever forgotten to record an interview with an important guest? Then while you're getting stressed, it gets picked up by the press. Front page headline news. Well, maybe not the front, but prominently viewed. The whole world sees your mistake. And now there's a question mark. Will you ever be friends with Amy Shark? And now the tide is going out, and the sky is getting dark, and the water is getting. You'll never be friends with a shark. And the waves are coming down. If you go out now, you'll drown. You'll never have the chance again to make a shark your friend. Meant to be her friend, and then she'd introduce me to her other friends. Mark Hoppus and Ed Sheeran, Billy Corgan, Smashing Pumpkins, oh yeah. But it didn't work that way, and now I'll never see the day where she brings me along to Elton John. We'd have sung a song, oh yeah. Going out, the sky is getting dark, the water's getting cold. You'll never be friends with a shark, and the waves are crashing down. If you go out now, you'll drown.